Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi guys, and welcome to this week's episode of Heavy Metal Tones with me, your podcast host, Tony Evans. How's it going out there, guys? I really hope that you enjoyed last week's episode with the classic of On Through the Night with Def Leppard. I really enjoyed listening to it again. It's nice to sort of, this is what the show helps me do, you know. It helps me jump back into my collection and think about things I wouldn't normally do. And I know that a lot of the guys listening to the show, and girls and everyone in between, has said to me that they like the nod back to old albums and also the nod forward to something new. So this one's a bit different this week. This isn't going to be an album review. There'll be an album review next week, which I'm working on at the moment. But this one is, as it says on the title, it's basically a little chat, maybe not the longest chat in the world, but a chat about how it came about. I was flicking through the old TikToks, you know, like the kids in the hood do, one night, and I come across this female punk band from the UK. There was sort of like a crossover punk pop sort of hip hop thing. I can't remember the name of the act, sorry. But they were really, I mean, the lyrics were pretty, you know, foul and a bit sort of, you know, blue, which is okay, but it was the point they were coming across. They were basically coming across about the a very political point of view, and it made me think. Where did the political, where did politics go, or even meaning, like social meaning, go from music? Where's it gone? Because if you think about it, right, when we're back in the midst of time, when dinosaurs were the earth and I was a kid, you got your musical source from several options. You got it from a sibling, a parent, the Top of the Pops, or equivalent to the country you're living in, the radio, or your friends at school, right? So a few different outlets to give it to you. And depending on who you got it from is depending on the view that you took, right? Now, I've talked before, I've got a lot of siblings, and they all have very, very vastly different political views and social views. And not having a father that listened to popular music, I didn't have that direction, so it wasn't a parent. Friends at school, yes, but they also, like me, were raggy-assed kids with not much money, so we weren't really buying records. So it was either, it was my brothers, and it was Top of the Pops. We didn't listen to the radio because we weren't allowed to. So it was going to be, well, we were allowed to in our own rooms, I suppose, but we never did. Well, I did later on. But, you know, so it came down to your brothers, right? When we come from me, Top of the Pops and my brothers. Now, where I'm coming from is this. I did some research on this, and I'll talk about it later on. But from sort of like the at the beginning of rock and roll, you didn't have a social meaning in that music. Okay, it was a medium that basically was for fun and parties, right? You know, dance music, and there's a place for that. Okay, there's an absolute place for that. But then I thought to myself, you know, when did that become a point where meaning, social meaning and sort of moral things like that came into being? In all forms, even in our blessed and lovely heavy metal, it's there as well, which we'll talk about in a minute, later on. But, you know, you were sort of a... You were a learning through the medium of music, and that sounds like a real wanky sort of laborite, you know, school project. But you know what I mean, right? It means that you took your education through your TV, which I know I did, through my music, because I was not great at school, and even though I loved learning, because of my learning difficulties, I wasn't, and not having any help at home at all, nothing, zero, not a single piece of advice at home, homework or learning anything. So, you know, as I said before, I was a free range child, a latchkey kid, they call us then, they call us now, I think. Anyway, the reason I'm saying is that I took my learning from there, and I took quite an in-depth look at this recently. I was going to do this last week episode, but I thought this is going to be a much longer bit of research for me. And I think it's down to the fact that we don't have, this is going to sound like, it's going to sound really, I don't know whether it's me, if I had an epiphany, I may have done, and also may as well just wipe myself down afterwards. Hang on. Get off the monitor. I think it's because we don't live in a world where chart music is considered anything anymore. You don't look at charts. No one cares about charts. You may see it says, oh, number one in UK dance charts. Well, that doesn't mean anything. Doesn't mean anything at all. Because firstly, people don't buy physical medium anymore. Not in single versions anyway. And thirdly, it doesn't matter about charts, because charts were a way of selling records. That's the reason they were invented. It was to sell records. It was to show listeners and record buyers other music available. And to do that, you put in a chart. And the more you sold, the higher the chart you got. And every band wanted to get that coveted number one or that top 40 hit. Particularly in the UK, right? When I was a kid. Now I'm going to get, this is all UK centric because I don't never grew up anywhere else, of course. So, but this is how I see it. And so what we would do as kids is we would sit around when we could to watch Top of the Pops. We'd have Top of the Pops on. Or you know, later on, for the more sort of sophisticated listener, you had The Tube and you had Old Grey Whistle Test and things like that. But for us sort of teens, it was Top of the Pops, and you'd sit through the Top of the Pops to get to the top 10, and because you'd want to watch it, you want to know what's in the top 10. And of course, during that journey on that half an hour, you might come across a track that will pop up, say at number 29, and they might actually play the whole song, you know, because they towards the end of the latter end of the 80s. Top of the Pops changed. I watched a really good documentary on Top of the Pops. Now, I am a music nerd, as you know, so this was like really, I loved it. And they said that towards the end of the top 80s, they started playing outside of the top 10 format to get, and not top 40, in fact, to just sort of like fill the space up with up-and-coming music because of the changing scenes, the constant fluidity of pop culture and youth culture, which seems to have sort of stagnated at the moment, I think. Anyway, you'd sit there and say, so you'd be, you know, be waiting because you knew that, say, your song was going to be at, it was at number 12 last week, and I wonder where it's going to be now. Is it going to be higher or lower? So you're waiting for it. And a classic example for me in that respect was waiting to see where something like You Can Call Me Al by Paul Simons, where that was sitting, because I absolutely, or Sledgehammer by Peter Gabriel, I absolutely adored those singles, and I couldn't wait for them to see when they were, where they got up higher in the chart, or, you know, later on Marillion or Iron Maiden or whatever, but you always wanted to get your single, right? Anyway, I remember waiting for to see where, as I said, probably one of those tracks, I think it was more like You Can Call Me Out, and on in comes at number like 38 comes a track called Camouflage, right? Now, really catchy, really fun single, really, you know, just a brilliant piece of music. I couldn't get the tune out of my head. It was by Stan Ridgway, right? And it got to number two in the UK, actually, you know. It was obviously his debut album, The Big Heat. It was the third single off the album. That's irrelevant. But I sat there and I could not stop singing it. And it's a song about a Vietnam soldier who gets saved by a big guy called Camouflage, who he calls Camouflage. He turns out to be already dead. And when he saves him, he's like a spirit that saves him, saves his life. And it's a really quite an interesting, like Paul Hardcastle's 19, you know, about the average age of a soldier in Vietnam. It was very hard hitting lyrically, but it got to number, as I said, number two, right? And Paul Hardcastle's 19 got to like number one for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. And you know, when you're like, well, I was 13 then. So when you're 13, you know, you're beginning to see a bit of the world. You're understanding a little bit of what's around you. Well, we did back then anyway. And these sort of messages were seeping into your head. And this was the only way Vietnam was never, I mean, apart from watching the occasional war movie with my dad, I never understood anything about Vietnam. Never understood anything to do with it, you know. It wasn't until much, you know, I mean, I'd listened to War Pigs by Black Sabbath, which, again, I'm going to talk about. It's a, you know, a classic anti-war song written by Geezer Butler. Written quickly as well. It was a quickly written song. For me, I'd listened to it, but I didn't understand it. And it wasn't until I sort of, you know, I was 13 years old and I listened to this song, Camouflage, which was a very, very catchy single, and I really hope you go and jump and have a listen to it. I still have it on 12-inch, I think, somewhere. I then went to the library and got some books out on Vietnam and had a read, because, let's face it, I was not that long away from it, right? And also not that far away from the Falklands, but that was more punk, and punk stuff was more political, straight out from the bat, more social, straight out from the bat. So I'm not going to talk about punk at the moment, because that's quite obvious. That's an obvious thing. I mean, apart from the fun punk pop bands, most of it was politically aimed. I mean, stemming straight from, you know, The Clash is classic. I might mention them later on with some songs, but it's a bit too easy for me to talk about that. What I wanted to talk about, as I mentioned, was getting your social message and political message through your popular music. And it just feels to me, I tried to look for something in what was available now. And I don't mean searching for stuff you know that's political. I'm talking about, I just went to top 10 downloadable pop songs on Spotify, and you can do this on all other platforms, they are available, and I found not one single piece of music that had any real hard-hitting social message. It was all, and I'm going to be honest here, it was all vapid, one-dimensional, three-chorded, quantized, or whatever it is. It's all click to a track. It's all boring. It was all dull. Yeah, fair enough. It's for going out and partying too, and you know, whistling to yourself in a car. But we've done that, haven't we, people? We've done it. It's been done, and where why have we lost this? Is it an education thing? I have written that down. Is it an education thing? Is it an indictment on our education system? Is it the fact that the youth of today don't feel that they are disenfranchised or they are different? I mean, I would have thought with the amount of wokeism and every year a new letter adding to something you can't talk about being tagged on, I would have imagined that there'd be plenty of tracks and music politically and socially and even to do with sexuality that would open your eyes and educate you in some respect through the medium of music. But it doesn't seem to be the case. But also then I thought, when did it die? When did it stop? And has it really stopped? Or am I just looking in the wrong spot? And I've come to the conclusion, I think it's not stopped, but it's really, really thin on the ground. I mean, obviously, there are still bands out there, political bands, but that's when you, as I said, that's looking for them. That's not just bumping, coming across them like I did on TikTok the other day, which was a real eye-opener for me. And actually, it really spurred this episode because I clicked into the sort of feedback, the messages, and someone said, it's really good to see politics back in music. And I thought, yeah, it really is. I mean, I don't want you to think that, I mean, I don't want people to be, what's the word? I don't want people to be brainwashed, and but I want into whatever political view you want using music. That's not what I mean. What I do want, though, is for artists to be allowed to express themselves socially and politically and not feel that they're going to be closed down, cancelled, switched off, you know, abused. I mean, you hear these stories, don't you? And you think, wow, it was never the case before. You could have a freedom of speech. And that's, again, why I really like heavy metal. I really, really like that. And of course, punk as well, because it doesn't give a fuck. It really doesn't give a fuck about anyone else. It doesn't care if you think it's going to be cancelled, because it doesn't, right? It's not playing about, you know, with playground love stories, is it? It just isn't. Nothing that Geezer Butler ever wrote. I mean, yes, he wrote some very strange drug-fueled stuff, but he always had a strong, hard-hitting message. Same with Queensryche, same with a lot of the new wave of British heavy metal bands, because, yes, there was a mix of, dragons and sorcerers, but it was also a lot of social commentary. Thrash is the same. Death metal is the same. A lot of war-themed messages, like the band Sabaton, right, which I've reviewed with Benji a little while back, one of Benji's favourite bands. I mean, yes, all their stuff is basically around war, but that stuff is educational as well. It's educating you on the bad side of war and the positive sides of freedom, right? And Maiden does it a lot. Maiden is very socially aware in that respect, okay? So is Metallica. So is all those big bands. But where is it in our everyday pop music? And I know this isn't a pop music forum and website, but podcast, but we do listen. We've had in our genes, all of us listening today, didn't just get out of bed one morning when they were 10 and go, right, I'm listening to Behemoth. You all have a musical journey, right, fellas, ladies, gentlemen, everyone? You've had a musical journey. Your musical journey comes through. It has to shine through somewhere in your tastes. I mean, you know, even the hardest of us might put on some ABBA, right? That is the God's honest truth. We do. And so I thought, where is that? Where is that where's the social commentary gone? Right? Because politics, if anything, now is worse than it has ever been. You know, the world is in, let's be honest, people, the world is in the shitter, right? It really, really is. We're in a space of time now where anything could happen and is happening, right? AI taking over the world, the Russians and the Ukrainians fighting each other, Israel problems in the Middle East, you know, political issues in America, all sorts of stuff that's going on. And so, where is it coming in our music? Now, I'm going to shut up now for a second, go and get myself some more drink. I might come back and talk about where I think it finished, where I think it ended, and where things that I listened to that had a moment for me. Anyway, I hope that's made you think too much. And while we're waiting for the advert, why don't you pick your phone up? Probably got your phone in your hand. And Google Camouflage by Stan Ridgway and have a quick listen. Or put it in your playlist to listen to, because it is a great number and it's a long forgotten one, which is a shame. Anyway, talk to you on the other side, guys. Bye for now.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome back, guys, to part two. I hope you've listened to Stan Ridgway's Camouflage. If not, it's there to listen to, right? Anyway. Yeah, so I made notes of the sort of the thoughts of my, you know, about social commentary and music. It was quite a really big rabbit hole I jumped into. You know, I thought it started off in the 60s with pop, with hippies, right? You know, it didn't do anything. Well, I've talked about that before. It's not my favorite form of youth rebellion, but it I think it lit the fire for bands to say things in their music that they probably wouldn't have done before. You know, I mean, the Beatles sort of did it a little bit, of course they did, but they were in that only when they were reaching into that hippie, you know, Pepper, Sergeant Pepper era. Now, then you come into the 60s, late 60s, early 70s, there was a lot of that going on, okay, because of Vietnam and so on, right? Now, if we take out the punk aspect from it, okay, you did get some really fantastic social commentary tracks like Imagine, by, you know, obviously by John Lennon, as we all know that. Big Yellow Taxi by Joni Mitchell, which is about destroying of the habitat. All right. And of course we've got Black Sabbath's War Pigs, which is an anti-Vietnam War song. And these songs here, you know, there's a lot more of those in the 70s. I'm absolutely shocked. I'm not going to list everything, because if I do that, we'll be here all night and I won't get to the 80s. I'm trying to pull aside the punk, because if we think of punk as one, we add that in, The Clash, you know, Dead Kennedys, Stiff Little Fingers, The Skids, they all had social messages, all of them. The Pistols, okay, another one. I don't want to go that route because it's too much. Like, it's like fishing, like you know, fishing, catching fish in the barrel, as they say. You know, shooting fish in the barrel. Sorry, you know, it's too easy because that's the medium that really sort of solidifies social meeting in music. But because of that, see, with the hippie sort of revolution, it didn't leach too far into everyday music. It was there, you had a little bit, but it leached very slowly, very softly. It didn't change anything. Was punk sort of, it made it possible for even the most sort of vapid of 80s electro pop bands to have some kind of social political outreach, because they come from that, the listeners, the performers of that music have come through the punk scene, and that's where they were, you know, cutting their teeth. And that's why the 80s is flooded with this stuff, absolutely flooded with it. That's why I'm saying, you go to the Top of the Pops, it was on every single week, and the radio was on every single week. You know, if it wasn't Billy Bragg, you know, it was Peel. If it wasn't Peel, it was The Police. If it wasn't, you know, it was XTC with Dear God. It was U2 with Sunday Bloody Sunday. You know, one of my favorite, growing up, one of my favorite records, and I still listen to it every now and again, is Grandmaster Flash and the Wheels of Steel. You know, the sort of pioneers of proper early hip hop before it became Boats and Hoes and Bitches and Stitches and all that sort of stuff, before it became disgusting. When you had, they had White Lines, you know, which was a brilliant anti-drug song, Again, it was covered by Duran Duran a few years ago. If you want to listen to that version, do so. But the original version is absolutely brilliant. The message is still one of the most important hip-hop tracks of all time, and it's a wonderful insight into a mixture of street culture of New York and accessibility of pop, and it really grabs you, and that was on Top of the Pops. That was stuff that was coming through, you know, and it's the stuff that, you know, obviously Billy Bragg is extremely obvious when it comes to his I wouldn't call what he comes through on Top of the Pops or on music programs as a surprise. He's political because he's very political. Although songs like Sexuality with Kirsty MacColl, God rest her soul, that was a really poppy song. What I was trying to reach out and what I was trying to grab was people in their early teens, maybe, you know, coming through their like 10, 11, 12 to the 30, early teens onwards, who were listening to music with no idea what the message was about. That's what I was trying to say. If you're going looking for message in music, you'll find it. I was trying to think about music that was around that wasn't aimed with a message. It just had one. One of the most beautiful songs ever written as a pop song, with the most wonderful, catchy chorus, and actually makes you feel a bit teary, is Peter Gabriel's Biko. All right, Biko is, you know, it was written about Stephen Biko, who was during the apartheid issues in South Africa, and his early death. It's just a wonderful piece of social commentary, but it's a pop song as well, right? It's sing-alongable. Is that a term? It's catchy. And if you didn't know who it was about, you'd find yourself, I'm sure there were 10, 11-year-olds walking to school singing Biko, the lyric, you know, the chorus, whistling the chorus to Biko, Biko. I'm sure they had absolutely no idea what they were doing. Michael Jackson, for instance, also had social commentary in his music, you know, about unwanted pregnancies and so on. It's a very, you know, we were very blessed in the era. And I feel sorry for children, A, not having the constant connection to music. I think music is becoming less important, or has become exponentially less important to people's lives, the youth particularly, the youth, and it's become throwaway. Now, as I said at the beginning of the program, where are they getting it from? I think the reason they're not getting their social commentary through music anymore is because of the internet. Because at the tip of their fingers, through TikTok, through Instagram, through Facebook, although they're not using Facebook anymore, the youngsters, you know, YouTube, all sorts of, you know, Reddits, whatever they're doing, they're getting their information that way. It's being fed to them there. Not necessarily through their siblings and their family, now through complete strangers that just pervade the dark recesses of the vast, infinite, monkey-filled internet. As I said to a lot of people the other day, I don't mean this honestly, the internet, the phone in your hand is full of infinite information and wisdom, but infinite monkeys and idiots. It makes me sad. Okay, so you had these amazing things that were coming through then. So I could name so much more. I really could. And the 80s pervade that way, you know, in all forms of its music. It was message in pop music, there was message in heavy metal, there was messages in rock music, there was message in AOR, you know, adult-oriented rock. You had it in your prog with Marillion, and you had it in, God, even in your country music, and that's saying something, right? You had it in electronic and dance music. I mean, particularly because we were living through the shadow of AIDS, people like Queen, you know, were writing songs to give you, you know, more awareness. Frankie Goes to Hollywood, right? It was so much. Yes, you had your Girls on Film from Duran Duran, and you had your party music, you know, Agadoo and all that kind of stuff. There was a place for that, but most of it, at least somewhere in the recesses of the top chart, the charts from 40 down to number one, there was something in that musical that could make you think, or was there for you to learn, right, without knowing you were learning. And then we moved into the 90s, right, and all sorts of things happened in the 90s. Now, the 90s again was an era I think of as a flat, dead time in music. I just do. You know, metal was sort of pushed aside, even worse than when punk was around. You know, R&B was taken over in a massive way. There were still subcultures. You know, you had Britpop, which was very political. Okay, that was sort of like a soft version of punk, wasn't it? It was like the 90s kids discovering punk and then making it a bit more accessible. You had your don't forget grunge. I'm not gonna forget grunge, but grunge is a bit too like punk. It's too obvious. But your Britpop stuff definitely. You know, reggae was rearing its head again, and that's very politically driven. You have ska in the 80s was all based around that. I mean, what the Selector and the Specials were doing on the Two Tone label was something special. Much Too Young is something special. Ghost Town, something special. Really something catchy, sing-along, but very, very, very politically driven. You know, and these bands broke up and became things like Funboy Free and Thompson Twins and all that sort of stuff. You know, pure pop, but with a little bit of political hit to it. And in the 90s, yeah, it was sort of scattergun, wasn't it? Because if you weren't listening to, there was a lot of looking back in the 90s, with Britpop looking back at the 60s, into ska and to mod, and the Who-driven stuff and the Beatles-driven stuff and messages. And then, of course, you had your techno and your dance, which is purely in-house, which is just purely like, get it off your face, dance, forget about the world. And I think that's sort of where it starts to begin. It starts to bubble in there because house music and dance music becomes really very popular. And then rap, where rap had a social side to it originally, I think it then morphs. I mean, it's probably still there, but it morphs for me into, as I said before, bitches and hoes and boats and attainment and misogyny and just, I don't know, maybe I'm getting that wrong. Maybe the people listening to rap who love it, I don't know. Just it seems to take over our musical lives and our charts, and R&B really takes over, and R&B has no political edge whatsoever. R&B is soul, and soul is what it is for there. Soul is about feeling and music and beauty and I love soul music, and you know, a lot of that, you know, the Nina Simone stuff is wonderful, really beautiful stuff to listen to, but it's not got anything to inspire you socially or politically, has it? All right, you know, and there, you know, you had the occasional thing like The Ghost of Tom Joad by Bruce Springsteen. That was extremely political. All right, that's it's based around the book Grapes of Wrath, by Steinbeck. All right, it's Rage Against the Machine did a cover of it in 2014, which is amazing. Again, the 90s, you had Rage Against the Machine, very hard and heavy, very rocky, but also very political, but in the charts. So a rarity, you know, a rarity where the charts will come on and something as something that could be banned by the Top of the Pops or Radio 1, but still be a big seller that wasn't, you know, if you listen to the amazing staccato bass line and the seesaw guitar and the, you know, the bouncy music, and you just get carried away, and before you realize, you know, before you realize it, you're singing along to an, you know, a song that's, you know, that's about freedom of speech, and ironically it gets banned, and it's about freedom of speech. It's because it uses the F word, which, you know, by then you should think was not such a big shock, right? You know, King in the Name Of, you know, it's about freedom of speech. Is also about, you know, racist cops killing ethnic youths, and, you know, getting away with it, basically. You know, System of a Down, go back to a heavy rock and metal, System of a Down in 2002, you know, with their stuff, that they had a very sort of corporate, they did tracks about corporate greed and weapons of mass destruction, you know, Arcade Fire, the Intervention, you know, but that's 2006, but the 90s, okay, the 90s, yeah, it was a bit sporadic, wasn't it? And then as we led out of the 90s into the 2000s, we were all listening to things like Barbie Doll and Kylie Minogue. And, you know, one of the performers that really had a bit of a political edge that no one thinks about had being that way was Madonna. And Madonna, you know, even right from the beginning, was writing songs about, you know, the church's control over youth, sexuality, you know, abortion, all that sort of stuff. But we, you know, but we think of her as, we think of her as, get into the groove, boy, you know what to do, boy, that kind of thing. But really, no, she was very political, and extremely popular in pop music. But again, we didn't think about that. We didn't. So that just popped in my head then. I completely forgot about Madonna when I was doing my research. And I'm sure if someone's shaking their fist at me, going, you forgot about Madonna? No, I hadn't. Now it came to me. You know, and then we sort of leave the 90s behind into the 2000s, where again we sort of went bland, right? Really bland. Lack of direction, lack of anything sort of, I don't know. Sorry, I'm trying to find where I am at. Let me make my notes. Okay. Excuse me, watch out here. There we go. Of course, you did have early 2000s stuff like Green Day and those sort of American pop punk bands. But again, it's punk, and it's too obvious. It's too really bloody obvious. There wasn't anything I can think of. I mean, yes, grant you, I was raising a young family then, and maybe I wasn't looking at the charts as closely as I would have done when I was 13 and 14. And there are more people educated than me that might say, Tony, you have completely missed the mark there. There was this, this, and this. And if I did, I'm really sorry. But I just think that with the death of regular chart watching, music press, as in magazines, hard copy magazines, I mean, not online, music punditry, such as, I mean, yes, now we have podcasts, so wonderful. There are idiots like me all over the world doing things like this, right? But that's not mainstream. I'd love to think I was mainstream. Gosh, it'd be fantastic if I get my word across to everybody, but I don't want to. And secondly, that's not what this is for. But you know what I mean? You know, it sounds like an old man looking back and wistfully thinking of the past, but no, I genuinely worry that we are breeding a world of yes and no men, right? People and women and whichever gender you wish to find yourself in. But you know what I mean, okay? Are our children discovering the world morally, politically, socially, artistically? Are they finding it through the music and the art that they are watching, listening to now? I really doubt it. There's a reason why there was a research done years ago, and I have mentioned this before, that the most educated music listeners are heavy metal listeners. There is a reason why, because you have to think about a lot of the music that we listen to in metal. It's a thinking music. Yeah, there's throwaway metal, of course there is, and we have Van Halen for that, don't we? Right? We have hair metal for that, right? We do. We have Whitesnake. We have all that sort of stuff. Of course you do. But a lot of it's a little bit of thinking, right? And I know I'm missing something here. I know I definitely am missing things. But my worry is that where are they getting it from? If their major musical source, I mean, Beyonce has released a couple of very, very politically related music, and that's brilliant. And a lot of musicians have and still do. You know, Lady Gaga, extremely important. Childish Gambino, all these people do this stuff, but it's not chanced upon while waiting for your next hit to come along by listeners. It's not open and easy to access. Sorry, it's not. You don't brush across it and suddenly find yourself singing about it and then researching what was that song about. I just don't think the kids are doing that, you know. Sorry, my computer's decided to lock itself. God, I've got to fix that. Yeah, I just don't know where they're getting it from. And now you might say, but the information on the internet, you know, is going to be much more accurate, and musical information is going to be directed and projected by the person making the music. Yes, it is. Yes, it will be. And there will be absolute 110% errors and misdirected and guided information in those songs. Okay? I mean, but you can do what we did, and we would go and research that information. And yes, you might go, oh, hang on, that was Elvis Costello said that, but that's wrong. But you'd go and research it. So doing that aspect is creating more knowledge, more synapse connections, right? More understanding of the world socially and politically around you. Historically, even, right? I mean, I got my love of history, and I mean this, my love of history, from bands like Iron Maiden, my love of philosophy and art, a lot of that from watching Monty Python, to be honest, because that's the way we were. And, you know, is it, I don't know how to say this without sounding like, I don't know, I'm really worried. I just think that the level of education has dropped dramatically around the world. Everywhere, in any country, even the most, you know, up-to-date, wonderful countries like Sweden and Norway and Finland and Germany and all these countries that pride themselves on a very good education system. I think it's down to that. I think my worry is that if a child gets bored of his education at school, and let's be honest, most of us do, or did, where does his learning stop? Like when I left school at 16, I never stopped learning, right? Because I kept getting it through my music, particularly through my, at that time, real love of punk. So I really was reaching out socially and politically. And of course, you know, my brothers and the life we were living and, you know, music press and things like that. But I don't think, no, yeah. Anyway, what do you think, guys? Are you with me on this one? Do you think it's a bit of the fact that we've lost the physical medium of chart watching, and the music has now become so controlled and woked and so clean and sanitized that we can't take the risk because it won't make money? And I'm not talking about the small bands, because who cares? You know, these small acts know they're not going to make money. They're never going to be Madonna and Kylie Minogue and, you know, Police and Queen and all these huge bands, or, you know, dare I say it, you know, the sort of Adele's of this world. Although I'm sure Adele does write political music, and I think she probably does, actually. There are one-offs in my... There are flaws in my theory, of course, but, you know, this is the point, right? The point I'm saying is it because of that? Is it because of education at school is lacking? Is it because of the internet? Or is it all those things together? Or is it just because I'm old and that's how I feel? Possibly one or the other. Anyway, it was really fascinating looking into the those sort of songs and Googling it and finding that information and going to my own personal record collection and finding stuff that I had, because there's a lot of it in there, and not a lot of it about now. In fact, I don't know. I had to cleanse my ears after listening to a couple of the tracks that are sort of really big now. It's just I don't know. That's another episode. You know, is rock dead? I've already talked about that. I think it genuinely possibly is, to be fair, which is a really sad state of things. But hey, you know, punk is still there. Heavy metal still has its message. You know, there are rappers out there that have a social message. There are pop bands that do it. It's just not, as I said, you don't glance upon it by accident while waiting for your song to come on to listen to it on the radio, in the charts. It's just not there, because that's not how we consume music anymore. Anyway, I've sort of repeated myself now, so I'm gonna go. You have a really good rest of your week. As I said before, go and have a listen. Go look at your record collection. Go look at your CDs or your downloads or your Spotify listings and see how many of those from your past have a political and social meaning, and how many that you've downloaded recently, if you are into modern music, has it now. And you'd be surprised how little there is. Anyway, bye for now, guys. See you on the other side. Also, yes, please do leave a review, 5 stars if you could. I need to get to reach more people. By reaching more people, I can have more resources, and more resources mean more interviews and keeping the show alive. Bye for now.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.